Are you sure it's recording?
Yeah, this call is being recorded.
All right.
Oh my God. Welcome to Movie Podcast. That's right, Movie the Podcast coming at you live.
Not really.
From my basement.
Still not live.
But we're all here in the same room. We can literally touch everyone, plus Nate.
I'm here.
We can touch Nate.
We are all African Americans. Plus Nate.
We have a special guest. And we're
we fuck with you, Nate. Because Nate rocks with us.
We're doing it old school. We watched the movie all together.
Not but 6 minutes ago.
And now we're recording. This is literally, this is what the Biden administration took from you guys.
Yeah.
Thanks to their plandemic.
Yep.
But hi, everybody. It's Movie the Podcast.
Mind virus. Yeah. The fucking end of this podcast.
Speaking of horrifying things, we watched Children of Men.
It is July and more.
Yeah. It's July and more. Julie Moore is in this movie for a lot shorter than I remember her being in. Like, I'm just going to go ahead and say this on Front Street. I don't remember the majority of this film.
No, it turns out. I remember liking it.
I remember not liking it. And now I can't figure out what I didn't like about it. I kind of see, I remember not liking the ending, and I still see where my bitching is, but I don't know why it knocked me into the not liking it camp.
Were you watching it? And I was like, there's no way the future can end up like this.
Yeah, right?
This is way too far-fetched.
It's terrifyingly accurate to now. It's
almost quaint.
It's one of those things where it's like it's almost tough to watch because it's so...
The ending is very hard to watch.
But it's like so... It feels so current.
Yeah,
like,
well, it really does. It takes place in three years from now. It's 2027 in the movie.
Yeah.
And we're looking down the barrel of this now. Anyway. It's
everything that's going wrong just concentrated into one movie.
And British.
Yeah, which is a problem unto itself, but...
Yeah. But yeah, I can't wait to talk about
all this beans.
This is
a fun con.
Beans for breakfast.
This is a very nice bounce back from Juniper Lopez, which was
Juniper?
Awful.
It was Juniper, I believe.
Juniper Lopez. It's the worst alcohol drink. It was the
all
worst.
Gin based. Yeah, movies.
Gin is disgusting.
Deep.
Also, British, right? So that ties that. Yeah,
it's
so
thematic.
But what did y'all watch this week? I'm going to turn it over to our special guest, Nasty Nate. What have you watched in the 2 years since you've been on the show?
Every single fucking thing.
I've watched an infinite amount of things in 2 years. But of this week, I've watched four things.
Did you actually come prepared?
I did. I opened tabs so I can remember what I watched.
All right.
Real Alec Guinness over here. So genuine class.
Here's a ball.
One thing I've watched is called The Power of Film. Ooh. It's a documentary series that's on Max. This guy that teaches film classes goes through like all of the parallels in all classic movies. So, you know, family and triangular conflicts and things. It's really cool. It's well done. It's a lot of fun to watch, especially if you like movies and you kind of forget why.
It's a docu-series?
Yeah.
So like, Sean needs to watch this.
It's too. Like six parts.
He needs to find his smile again, like Shawn Michaels in 2003.
Movies are trash.
Yeah, Sean hates movies, man.
It is nice because it does. It goes back and just kind of says, like, these are the things that work. And then you start going, oh, yeah, I know why.
Yeah, it's
your robot doesn't work because there's all these things in there.
One of my favorite Simpsons jokes. That's why your robot doesn't work. See all that stuff inside?
I also watched the classic Paul Verhoeven Starship Troopers.
Oh, hell yeah.
Decided to do that again. Really enjoyed it.
Are you playing Helldivers?
I was about to ask.
I'm not, but yeah, that's like next on my list. I'm in the middle of chilling Baldur's Gate 3 right now.
Oh, that's
I'm way behind on video games. It took me a year and a half to beat Cyberpunk, and now I'm doing another long game about shit implanted in your head that you didn't do on purpose.
I never thought of it.
That is true.
Right.
Yeah,
it's a theme. But Starship Troopers, I think, is like a litmus movie for people, where it's just like however you watch it says more about you than it says about the movie.
Yeah. People love it, or it's either a masterpiece or they hate it. I don't like the people that hate it.
And the people, if you hate it for the wrong reason. Like, you can hate it for, like, hey, this is, like, a movie about propping up fascism and how we're slowly descending into it, right?
But you can't hate it for that because it's a parody of it.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, people are real dumb. Haven't you noticed that?
Well, it's like a thing with The Boys, too, where now there's discussion about this movie just now where people are starting to figure out what he's saying and they're not happy about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is another thing I watched. I watched The Boys. So I'm caught up on that. I watched all of this recent season. The most recent episode is awesome. I won't spoil anything.
They didn't put it all out at once, right? It's week to week.
It's week to week.
Has it been like that the whole time?
I don't remember.
I believe it has been.
Yeah, I think they did that.
They've been drip feeding it.
This episode possibly has the most resonant, real emotional interaction. Because has everybody watched up through four?
I haven't seen any of the new season.
All right. Well, so Sean, you know, like.
But I've seen plenty of discourse about it, so I feel like.
Hugh Senior is in the hospital. Yeah. At the end of episode four. Episode five deals with that in a way that's really compelling and I think really pushes this season across the line. And then otherwise, I've watched The Bear, part of it. Just
I've been wanting to watch episodes of the
new season.
I was just asking Alec about that because everybody's like so in love with it. But what do you think?
I really like it because it's, I mean, it's mostly just like long sort of cinematic hangout episodes mixed in with screaming. Right. Mm-hmm. And so it really, I don't know, it feels emotionally true and honest. The last season finale was the like Christmas party. Is that right, Alec?
That wasn't the first season.
Okay. Because they do like a flashback family Christmas party thing where like Jamie Lee Curtis is in it and
Just Hang Dong.
Yeah.
Jamie Lee Curtis hasn't been meow in 30 years, 40 years.
I don't think
But The Bear is good. And then the last thing, we started watching Perfect Wife, which is like a true crime series.
That's a man, right?
About
man.
It. It's about this like perfect blonde wife who disappears and comes back being like, I was chained up and tortured by two Hispanic women. Yes.
Yeah.
It is about Sherry.
Oh,
Kapini.
Shit.
Really compelling. Only we watched two of the episodes.
What's that on?
It's on Hulu, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, cool. Anything else? Nasty Nate.
That's all I watched. Yeah.
Grant, pass the mic, my friend.
Oh, I'm gonna pass the mic to Sean.
Oh no.
Sean,
I watched one thing, but I watched with TJ. So
cable.
Look off, dogs.
I didn't watch anything. I've been playing a lot of Elden Ring. So I'm gonna tell you this: Elden Ring DLC, Shadow of the Erdtree Tree. Shout out. Not bad.
Shout out to Miyazaki. Pretty good.
Yeah. Alec. I watched two things.
Two things?
First thing.
Hell yeah. It's even better live. I don't know. Two things live rules.
First thing is called Standing Up, Falling Down.
Oh, I do that all the time. Alec liked that one.
It stars Ben Schwartz and Billy Crystal.
Ooh.
Yeah. So it's from like 2 or 3 years ago. It's a kind of sad comedy. Ben Schwartz is he leaves his girlfriend, leaves his family.
And relatable moves back at McDonald's because they didn't serve breakfast.
Sure.
Is that a falling down?
Yeah. Standing up, falling down.
They move back. He moves back into his family and he encounters Billy Crystal, who's a drunk old, dermatologist.
Oh, I didn't see that coming.
Yeah. And they just kind of get into like hijinks and become part of each other's lives. Ben Schwartz.
Is that Reed John Ralphio's?
Yeah. And Sonic.
He's in he's really funny, but it's in like a subdued role, which is weird because every other role that he's in is John Ralphio, which I love. Billy Crystal's good at it. I can't think of anybody else really.
Is it newer?
It came out a couple of years ago. His dad is the dad from Transformers.
I
can't remember. It's Kevin something.
Yeah, I can't think
of it. He was also in the Julia Louis Veep. He was one of her like campaign managers in Veep, and he's really funny.
I've heard that show's good. I've never seen
that. Veep is good. Excellent.
It's really good.
The first few seasons, I never finished it. The first few seasons are absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, it's really good.
There's a great scene in Veep where she's meeting the Baltimore Orioles. And, like, she asks this, like, her staff, like, who the players are. And they're like, yeah, there's the starting pitcher, a starting pitcher, a starting pitcher. She's like, you guys think I'm fucking retarded? You don't have more than one player the same name. She goes and meets them, and it's in that, like, I forget, like, 2012 era. Like, it's Tommy Hunter. And a couple other actual players that are all starting to and she's just like, God damn it. It's really funny.
Tommy Hunter.
Tommy Big Game Hunter.
It's the second time in 2 days that guy's been brought up.
The other thing I watched I'm not sure why. We're probably just because we were high. Ride Along 2.
Wait, they made a Ride Along 2?
Yeah, Ride Along 1 with Kevin Hart and
Ice Cube.
Ice Cube. And they made a sequel.
Oh my God. That's
real bad.
Yeah, go figure.
Olivia, but oh yeah.
Oh my God.
I like Kevin Hart a lot.
Olivia who?
Munn.
Oh, okay. Olivia Munn is like the lead.
Oh my God. It's just her. It's a one man.
Yikes. When Olivia Munn is your star power, like, oof.
I like Kevin Hart a lot now.
Yeah, he's fun.
Like, in a lot of the stuff that he does now. But I never watched his earlier stuff. And seeing that, I'm like, I'm glad I didn't.
Yeah, yeah.
He's just like high pitched, annoying. He's whining about everything. Oh, it's awful.
Yeah,
it's so bad. Real
beta.
Ice Cube is basically the same as Ice Cube in every other movie. He's just cool.
Yeah, he's just. I mean, he has
the name.
He's kind of just Ice Cube in everything.
It's kind of a lot of range.
Nah.
That is all I watched. I got to catch up on The Boys. I watched the first three when they released the first three. And I got to watch the next couple. I can't think of anything else right now.
Cool. To me. And I watched, real quick before we get into the table thing, I started watching Shogun after Sean's recommendation. Only watched the first episode. Loved it. Sean neglected to tell me that there's titty in it.
Oh,
so, I mean,
I don't want to ruin it for
through
you.
The roof, like hot Japanese broads, like
top tier,
big fan. But yeah, it's really good. And the guy that is the lead, like white guy, is very much like Tom Hardy. Like he reminds me of Tom Hardy. It feels like they wanted Tom Hardy and they couldn't get him, so they got this guy. I forget that actor's name. He's been in a bunch of stuff that I've liked. He's been in a movie that I've mentioned on the show a bunch of times called Calm with Horses, with him and Barry Keoghan, however you say his name.
Yeah, that guy.
It was a movie I highly recommend. Like, I don't think anyone saw it. And it's a movie that has like three different titles. It's one of those type movies where it's like the
Live, Die, Repeat.
Well, I think Calm with Horses is like the original name.
Every time you say Calm with Horses, I think Kamala Harris, and I don't know why.
What'd you fall out of a coconut tree? But no, Calm with Horses is like the original like Irish title. And then like, I think it's like, it's got an American title that's like Under the Shadows, or it's something like really
horse to the max.
It's so stupid.
Chill out, horse.
But it's literally just like a low stakes like crime movie. It's really good. But anyway, that's where that actor's from. Shogun's great. I can't wait to watch more of it. But then Sean and I went to the theater.
Oh my God,
we watched the new Yogurt Lanthimos movie, Kinds of Kindness, which. An anthology film. I thought it was fucking brilliant. I think it's absolutely insane. And the fact that you can go to a normal fucking movie theater and watch this movie, and it's a Fox movie, is fucking wild. Watch
most people make it through the movie.
Oh yeah, we were behind. This couple behind us did not make it.
They left.
Huh?
They did.
He did pause when tits came on the screen.
Yeah, but like I said to Sean, it was an old white man, and he would have literally died like a Victorian child given Skittles if I told him that it was a trans woman on screen that you saw her tits. But yeah, it's great. It's funny. It's fucked up. It's it's like it's everything. Like it's so all over the place, and it keeps you on your toes because you just don't know what he's going to do next. Like, I just love it.
Is there a common, I mean, I'm going to ask a dumb question, but is there like a common thread through the anthology?
Not really. Yeah, little weird things carry through, like eggs for some reason, like are featured, and there's like little tiny things. And
what, even like theme doesn't carry through?
No,
not really. Weird.
Like, it's kind of like, I guess, like most of his other good movies, it's about how bad relationships are and how like,
I mean,
absurd humans and sex are.
Yeah, I mean, I guess technically all three of them deal with like relationships, but like you could kind of boil down like every movie is kind of about relationships.
I was telling TJ, it's one of those movies where you could be asked him like, oh, what is the symbolism? And he's like, symbolism?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Like, I feel like this movie is, like I said to Sean after we walked out of the theater, but like to me, it felt almost like a Dadaist movie where it's like I feel like there could be people that would like try to pick apart the movie and like, this is representing of this. But I think like, it doesn't mean anything. It's all just absurdism. Like it's just completely like out there. Every, what you see is literally what it's it means. Yeah.
Emma Stone is really funny in the movie.
Yeah. Emma
Clemens.
He's great.
Everybody's really
good. Well, that's the thing too. So in each, it's three movies, but in each of the movies, it's the same cast. They just play different characters.
That would confuse the fuck. Are they going to Black Coat's Daughter me?
I mean, it's, they're separate movies.
Yeah.
They're not the same. They're not the, the.
Too stupid. like yeah. American Horror Story did that, right?
Yeah.
They took the same cast.
Yeah, I love that idea. I think it's really cool.
It's got that absurd, like, Killing of a Sacred Deer dialogue.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
all very stiff and weird. I think there's some non-actors in it, possibly.
Oh,
one
God.
Who might be the funniest performance I've ever seen in a movie is as this police chief.
This super overweight police chief that has this weird kind of like Dusty Rhodes-esque kind of lispy voice. And he's like, look at him, the way he strokes his hair like a lover that doesn't know how to, like, it's like, what the fuck?
It's, like, it's like they just fucked for the first time and he doesn't know how to say that I love you.
Like, where did they find this? There is a joke in this movie that hit me so fucking hard that, like, it's, I'm not going to spoil it, but it's like...
It also, I think it's the joke I'm thinking of. You can't, it wouldn't make sense out of context.
It's a joke in the middle of the set. Well, it's like right in the beginning of the second movie, but it's so fucking funny and so out there. Like it's just, I don't know. I thought it was brilliant. I loved it.
How long is each one of these movies? Like 45 minutes?
Pretty long.
The pretty long. The movie's almost 3 hours long. Oh. It doesn't feel long. Like, it definitely moves.
So I was telling TJ, like, instead of stretching out one bad idea to like 2.5 hours, just make three movies instead.
Yeah. But it's super, like, it's everything I like about his stuff. Like, it's super original. It felt very like him, right? Like, he's the only one that can make this kind of fucking movie. And I think it's funny.
Well, because, like, Riley Stearns, maybe.
Yeah. Well, I think it's funny because, like, you know, he's gotten a lot more. He won an Oscar for The Favorite. And then Poor Things was like very well received. And Poor Things is still a weird ass movie, but it's a very, it's almost a more approachable weird ass movie.
It's a very direct, like, A to B to C movie.
It's just weird just things weird. Happen around the characters. But like, I feel like maybe he was like, oh, wait, people think I'm a normal director. No, time to
this one's for the boys.
Yeah, it's time to just turn it to 11 and make this
more dogs.
Insane. Ironically enough, there is a lot of dogs in this movie. In the second movie, it's kind of a plot point, actually.
Yeah.
The dogs, it's amazing. I thought it was great. All three of them were, all three of the movies in the movie was great. I loved it.
And, like, I guess I can, not spoilers, I guess, but like, there's a, in one of the vignettes, they have a Dodge Challenger.
Oh my God. Man.
And every time they're driving it, she just, like, John Wick parks, like, out of context.
Just no turns.
Just, yeah, like, it's just constantly. And then she just gets out of the car like normal. It's the funniest
shit. Yeah, they don't. It's funny because they don't, no one like mentions it.
No, but then in a chase or anything, it's just like she pulls into a regular ass parking lot.
But then it does pay off narratively, which is kind of hilarious because it's like, oh, that's why he did that. But it's very, the whole movie is very clever.
Yeah, I mean, you got Hellcat, you got Flex.
It's, but what you see in the trailer, actually, her like hauling ass, but I loved it. I thought it was great. It was
so much fun.
Would I like it?
Maybe.
Would Alec like it?
No.
I think Alec would like it.
No, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't think so.
Well, there's nothing like really like it's not like Dogtooth. There's no Dogtooth issues in it.
There's some sexual assault stuff that happens in the movie.
Yeah, but just regular adult on adult sexual assault. That's fine.
I don't know. I don't think he would.
What about
nothing against?
We're gonna watch it
anyway. Yeah,
Nate would like it.
What I like about
Nate would.
Lanthimos
Nate's
is,
a fuck,
is
fucked up guy. He doesn't look like it.
A lot of darkness.
Nate's like a David
behind Lynch. That smile.
Nate's like a David Lynch.
Behind that smile and those dead eyes.
Nate's like fucking Blue Velvet. Like everything's fine under the, but under the surface.
Zack Snyder's Blue Velvet.
Yeah, everything slows down.
Me and Sean were pitching Zack Snyder says that Blue Velvet's his favorite movie. We're like, what the hell would that look like? Like
what? Explosions.
Yeah.
But yeah, what I like about Lanthimos is he's doing the messing with expectations thing around movies. Like, I haven't seen this yet, but you talking about that, like, car parking move. It feels like the sort of thing where, because Lanthimos likes to show you, like, hey, these are things that are normalized in movies, air quotes. But what if we apply them to real life, and then we apply writing around real life to that?
He thought way deeper than I did.
So he, like, fucks around with it, you know? in a way that Rian Johnson doesn't, right? Rian Johnson plays with expectations in a very, like...
He disappoints you.
Well, I think he takes pleasure in the idea that you're disappointed.
That's what you should say to your kids when they do something wrong. Be like, you have subverted my...
That's hilarious. I think
it's going to be an interesting movie. I feel like I've already seen people talk like it's a very divisive movie.
The fact that it's widely released and like the trailer tells you nothing. So like,
but it just came out this week, right?
Yeah.
Is it going to make a longer run than Boy Kills?
It will not make it to the end of the day.
I mean, again, like Sean said this and he's totally right. But like if you don't know his work, like I don't even know why you'd go see the movie. Like the old couple, like
kindness,
the old couple that like walked out, like what did they expect? Like, you know what I mean? Like
the guy,
you want air conditioning at this time. That's probably
the wrong deal. Like, when's Mad Max showing up?
But you know, it's like it's a bad time when you walk in and it's the shitty chairs.
We were in a theater that like I didn't even know was a theater. Like, it's, like, tucked away in the corner. I was like, what the
fuck? You didn't fold the chair
like,
yourself.
We walked right past it. Yeah. We're like, wait, that's a theater? Yeah, it had the old seats and everything.
Ew.
Yeah.
Ew.
It was at the mall. It was
like a poverty theater.
Right. But, yeah.
You paid full price for this?
No, I'm on the AMC subs list.
Stubs.
Yeah, I'm an A-plus member or whatever they call
it. AMC Stubs.
But let me pick a bone with them real quick. So, you can see up to 3 movies a week, right?
Right.
But you can't get 2 tickets at once.
Oh, right, because you could just say, just give me my allotment.
How stupid is that?
That's dumb.
Yeah, how stupid is that?
Fucking dumb.
If I can see 3 movies a week, then I should be able to go to 1 screening and get 3 tickets.
You should be able to buy 3 seats to 1 film.
Yeah. Exactly.
And spread out.
But you can't. They only give you 1. I'm like, that's fucking cheap. Mm. Anyway. But yeah, it's great. Go see it. Or don't. I mean, I don't know.
Or don't. It sounds like you and Yorgos Lanthimos have the same opinion.
I mean, again, it's not for everybody, so I can see people like absolutely hate it.
It's got like a 40% on Fandango.
What's his RT score though? It's probably through the roof.
No, it's like 60-70.
RT's not for fucking, you know, nerds. It's always like, oh, it's too woke.
what's the film weeb RT then? We need to have
Letterboxd. Okay. Yeah, what's the Letterboxd score? It's probably very high.
1 trillion.
Yeah. This is it's a letterbox ass movie.
It's a prestige.
Also, picture. I mean, it's kind of a spoiler, but like in a vacuum, it doesn't make any sense. There's a Ronnie James Dio joke in the movie that killed me. Yeah. I thought it was amazing. Best use of Rainbow in the Dark ever.
It's not even in like the Rotten Tomatoes like homepage. Like you're gonna actually search for it and like, out presently.
There you go. All right. Well, I guess that's it. That's everybody, right?
All right, guys. Good job.
All right. Yep, see you guys. Children of Man.
Children of Men.
Or Men. Why do I keep doing
Men?
That? It's the prequel, Children of Man.
Wait, which one is it? Children of Men. Is it?
Not? I keep it's doing men. That. It's it Men. Men. Yeah,
men.
It's
children of Men. Men.
not Child of God,
movie
which is
he
a.
Swore was bad.
Yeah.
I never said it was bad. I said I didn't like. I said there was parts that I didn't like, but I still don't agree.
In 10 years, we'll rewatch a Book of Eli and see if you've come to the right opinion on that.
I still don't like that movie. Oh. That movie does suck.
I'll stand by that. They're equal.
Oh, fair enough. You don't want a Braille Bible?
No.
A Bible?
A Bible?
All right. It's Children of Men. Movie opens. And, young Rocco.
It does.
Young Ricky Ricardo.
Baby Diego.
I was like, where are you going?
Baby Diego.
NBA young boy.
Yeah. Baby Diego. You got Clive Owen, who doesn't get enough good work because he just destroyed. Let's just put it out on Front Street. Destroys it in this movie.
He's great.
He's out there getting a latte or a fog or whatever you get in London.
No, he's just getting like black coffee because he doesn't take cream or sugar. That's how come he don't get exploded.
Yeah. So then he's there in the local tea house and you find out that the youngest man on earth was 18 and he got Selena'd and now everybody else.
How are we sitting on that?
I said it earlier and it didn't get a
laugh. I didn't hear it.
I ran it back. You're in a world where they haven't had a child. A child has not been born in the entire world in 18 plus years. And now the youngest one has been murdered. All of society is basically on the brink of collapsing because everyone's lost all hope. Cause who gives a shit? And I think that is actually very eloquently said later when he's talking to his cousin, who's an art collector. He's like, in 100 years, no one's going to fucking look at this. Yeah. Like, what does this matter?
He's like, I don't talk about it.
Yeah.
Well, there's also possibly World War III and Brexit have happened.
Well, so the rest of the world is like they make, there's like Paul Verhoeven adjacent advertisements on the buses and mass transit about how every other nation has fallen, but Britain prevails, but Britain's holding on by a fucking thread because it looks like Half-Life 2.
Yeah, and they make reference to, like, some kind of catastrophic event happened in America, but they don't get into it.
And they'll say what happened in New York. But so Clive Owen's out here just kind of living his, like, existence, like, what, why bother? And
yeah.
After, you know, baby Diego's death hit him, he goes to see his pillhead boss who lives in a closet, and he's like, hey, can I... Steve can have the rest of the day off on PTO because I'm real sad about this baby. And he's like, yeah.
But he's also real sad about almost getting blown up.
Yeah. He hasn't mentioned that to you. You think that gets you a little PTO, like almost being part of a bomb.
He doesn't give a shit about baby.
No, yeah, no, he doesn't give a shit about baby. But I would have gone to my boss and been like, I almost got exploded this morning.
We almost get exploded all the time.
Yeah. Go back to your energy factory.
Well, the thing that's cool about this movie is Clive Owen's character arc is he's dead at the beginning of the movie and he's dead at the end of the movie.
Spoilers.
He lives in between.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. And he only
Nate's
comes to
so
life
so good
at
movies.
Yeah, he's good at movies. Get your own show. Really good at movies.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, anyway, Nate.
That's exactly right.
So now he goes and visits Maud Cochine in the woods, who is living there, smoking weed, growing weed, listening to thrash metal with his, I assume, former photojournalist wife who had been tortured into a coma.
This movie's so good at setting up backstory just with photo montages
and things like that.
You learn a lot about things in well-placed exposition.
This is like the film school example of like show don't tell.
Yeah.
They don't really, there's not like a ton of exposition.
And when they do tell, it's done well.
Like the only
Clive Owen's backstory.
The Clive Owen exposition happens in a very natural and like appropriate
there's
way.
There's a couple, if a very minor nitpick, I gotta pick something. There's a couple like exposition lines that Michael Caine has that are a little like, okay.
Little
like,
on the nose, little ghost story.
But you gotta have something.
Yeah. So this is Michael Caine, who lives in like seclusion, like hidden out in the woods. Yeah. And he's not far from Brexhill. We're in a political climate where I don't know if they're being blamed for it or they're just a scapegoat or they just hate them.
I mean, that's the same thing, right?
Right, I guess. But like they're all the any non-British citizens are being rounded up and deported and sometimes deported from this mortal plane.
That's a trope that goes in British media for a really long time. It's also like the side plot of V for Vendetta, other shit.
So
this is all post 9/11.
Yeah.
The pandemic that's happening in this is infertility mixed with Homeland Security is a concept, right? Because Homeland Security is in this movie.
Right.
It doesn't exist in the UK the way that it did in the United States, or does in the United States.
Right.
But it's seen everywhere, which means that has conquered the planet.
Right. That,
that
idea is like
they also
pervasive.
Had a flu pandemic at some point.
Yeah. Yes. In 2008.
Mm-hmm.
So this movie, me and TJ, were the very Last of Us. Like Last of Us is like a must have been.
I don't know how I ever put it together, but like. This is like Last of Us, like this is very
borrowed heavily.
Yeah, it's borrowed heavily from even the look, the plot, the look,
the vibes,
like the whole like
the vibes are in shambles
on the military, like the way everything is laid out. It's very, very Last.
All that like almost like improvised, you know, the cages, the gates, all that shit.
Yeah.
So London or wherever he is in shambles. He's hanging out with Michael Caine, whatever. He's going to go get another latte, hopefully not to get exploded. And then Charlie Hunnam and some guys grab him and take him to, like, their secret fish base. And they are part of La Resistance. And that's where you...
They are friends.
They are part of La Resistance,
the tag
team.
The La Poisson, that means fish. And they... You're introduced to this month's namesake, Julianne Moore, and Julianne in the movie.
Diabolical name for a woman,
right.
Julianne,
yeah.
So you find out that she's been, and once again, they sort of just tell this only by saying the police pictures of you don't do you justice. Yeah. Like you find out that she is like the super terrorist the government has been looking for God knows how long, right? And then you find out her and Clive Owen. Well, you learn this through a picture at Michael Caine's house. they were a thing and they had a baby. And obviously that baby's not in the picture anymore. And she's like, I need your help to help get someone out of the country and out to the coast. And he's like, what am I supposed to do? He's like, you have a cousin. You know, so he goes and
he worked for the Ministry of Paperwork.
Yeah. So she's going to pay him 5,000 pounds or whatever. He's like, fine, fuck it. I'll do it. And he goes and he visits his like posh cousin who lives in like a power plant. Right. And he's like collecting all the art. And that's what we were saying earlier. He's collecting all this art from he's got the Michelangelo's David like in the middle of his foyer.
He's got Pablo Picasso painting. Yeah, that's it. Guernica like in his dining room.
He talked about how he couldn't get like the things he couldn't get that were like, you know, that had been already blown up. So you just know what kind of state the world's in, right?
He's like the CEO of Hobby Lobby.
Yeah.
It's quite literally.
So he gets he convinces him to get him the papers and he's like, all right, he goes and sees the resistance again. He's like, hey, I got, you know, I'm gonna do it. You hear the papers, but I have to go with. And they give him this elaborate plot to go dog racing. And he meets up with everyone and then he finds out that he's gonna be smuggling this young woman who is pregnant. And to the best of everyone's knowledge, she's a refugee, she's a legal immigrant.
At this point, you don't know.
No, you don't know. That's a good point. Yeah. He's like, it's just this woman's gotta go. She's fine. They start driving through the woods. They fall under attack by the Picts or the Romans. I don't know who, but they launch a burning, rolling car.
Visigoths.
Yeah. A Gaul has fallen. Julianne Moore exits the month.
She's unceremoniously dispatched. Which Goggs did the comment right with the right timing with, do we have to stop watching the movie now?
And I thought she was in this movie till the end, so if I had remembered.
Yeah, I thought she was in this much longer.
So also, like, we'll talk about this a lot, I'm sure, when we're doing a breakdown. But like, the scene in this car, the shot in this car, that like the oneer,
so cool. All of the like, there's so many like everything in this movie is like super long, complicated ass takes. Like that's the entire movie. It's just these very long, ridiculously planned out,
just takes. So meticulous. I could not imagine
and executed. Perfect.
How much rail did they have to lay for these fucking shots?
I have no fucking clue.
For all of the meticulousness of all these shots, too, like, everything makes you feel panicked the whole time.
It's a pressure cooker, like, this whole movie. You're constantly
anxious because it's got that horror movie energy where you're so close to one person you can't
see anything. Any music is diegetic, right? There's no soundtrack, right?
And mostly the movie is shot, like, super close. Like, you're very...
Or you get, like, the RE4 camera angle. John's called Gerard Butler. I would love to see the storyboards for this. Is a movie I'd like the art book for. I'd like the production book, see the storyboards, like, because they have to be insane.
They'd be nuts. So they get attacked in the woods. Julianne Moore gets got. They fly. They fly, you fools, and get away. They voodoo bury her in the woods. Also, after
she
they
gets got in like the worst.
She catches one of the throats.
She dies slowly, like in shot.
She has a gurgled death.
Yeah. Terrible. And they clip two cops and then they keep going. They go back to the fish house. I'll call it the aquarium. And they have to retreat. But there's a scene where they're doing like the voodoo burial of Julianne Moore in the woods in these tall, like kind of pine barrens. And so Clive Owen's been drinking the entire time. The first thing you see him do is he gets a cup of coffee, pour some scotch into it. Like, he's always hitting the bottle.
Well, like Nate said, he's dead, right? He doesn't care. He's like, he is like, just resigned to die. Like, he doesn't give a shit about anything.
Wait, because they're always like, you smoke? That'll kill you. Like, I'm counting on it. Not working. Yeah. Oh, yeah. We're also in a world where the government hands out suicide kits.
Yeah.
And it's advertised. What is it called? It's like Quietus?
Yeah.
Or something. It'll just send you
also,
off.
It's also implied by the fish who are deemed the terrorists that the terrorist acts are actually being carried out by the government to like basically blame them for what they're doing. But as you find out later on, like, who knows if they're telling the truth or not either.
Even Michael Caine says every time one of their politicians gets in trouble, another bomb goes off.
Right.
We get that in voiceover before we even see him.
And we got that in New York in 2008.
There's a scene where they're doing this and Clive Owen just wanders off, just being like a stoic British, you know, whatever, about to hit the bottle by the last cigarette. And he just he's still got Julianne Moore's blood on him. He just breaks down next to this tree. And it is a masterclass in fucking display of emotion. Like, it is
baptism.
It's fucking awful. And then he fucking tightens up and he fucking goes and they go to the
stiff upper lip. Yep. Yeah, that was weird for somebody to say.
He goes, they go to the rebellion hideout at this farm, and then it's revealed several things are revealed. It's revealed that this young refugee woman they're smuggling.
Possible sex worker?
Possibly. She yeah. said yeah, she got lots of.
She doesn't know their name. Yeah.
Right.
That's what I think they were hinting at.
But also sort of like another kind of like a Christ Mary Magdalene illusion, right? Like,
yeah, you know, Mary Magdalene did give birth to Jesus.
I know, but she was a whole worker. But she, you know what I'm saying?
There's lots of, like, I'm just busting balls.
The lowly, the blah, blah, blah. So, anywho.
I like the gospel of God.
Yeah. The whores will inherit the earth.
Gospel.
He finds out this young woman is pregnant. So the first pregnancy anyone's seen in who knows when. And then you also find out that, and I'm going to look up his name because I feel like we've been fucking butchering it the whole time.
Chiwetel Ejiofor.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. He is, he's like the
Ejiofor $5.
So he was the second in command of the fish, the rebellion.
Yeah, and fish and Luke and the gospel and all that shit.
So he...
Oh, yeah, I never even put that together.
So he... like Charlie Hunnam... Charlie Hunnam was... dreadlocked Charlie Hunnam shows up on a motorcycle. Who is excellent in this movie.
Well, because he barely has anything to say.
Right.
Yeah, he's just kind of...
He does it in whatever goofball accent he actually has.
And he's not really in frame fully. Yeah, like, no. He's almost never in focus. It's like he's in the movie, but not in the
really
movie. Which makes it work.
Yeah. So they've elected Luke, who is... He is now... he's now the leader of the fish. And then Charlie Hunnam shows up all fucked up. He's like, they fucking hurt. You find out that he was part of... They were part of springing this trap on them in the woods. And the goal was to kill Julian to make a power play so that Luke would be the leader now. And now they can use the baby for their own devices to promote the uprising. Right. So this is overheard by Clive Owen.
It's Clive also, Owen. I'm realizing now roughly the side plot of Blade Runner 2049.
Basically. Oh,
yeah.
So then Clive Owen overhears all this and he takes them. He takes the pregnant young lady and her basically nursemaid. And runs away with them and what is another very tense, very Last of Us stealth mission to get away. And
but
then
so cool because he meticulously takes apart the other cars so that they can't
realistic sabotage, yes. Right? Yes. So
super cool.
He gets away and he goes to Michael Caine's house and they're trying to figure out what the hell to do. And they're like, okay, we gotta get to the coast. We gotta get to fucking the human project. There's this boat that's going to meet us.
Which also I think is cool that there's questions whether or not the human project is actually real.
Right. It's like the green place in like Fury Road, right?
Well, it plays into all the religious stuff in this, yeah, right? Sure, because she alludes to a virgin birth being the thing at first before she says that.
It's a joke, yeah.
And then, it's all about faith in tomorrow. Literally, the boat's name is tomorrow.
Yeah, it's a little on the nose. But
but, you know, it's kind of nice.
Yeah, all
right. It's kind of nice.
It's sweet. It's kind of nice to believe in something.
Yeah.
Even if it's only a movie.
I wouldn't know. I have no idea.
So,
I believe in Gunnar Henderson.
They get to Michael Caine's house. You have some like nice moments there. You find out some exposition about the past between Julian and Theo. Theo is not Gerard Butler's name.
Clive
Owen's name. You find out about that they were protesters together and they fell in love and they both were fighting for the same thing. And then they had a kid and then that kid was taken from them. Through the flu pandemic.
What were they protesting, do you think?
Like, I imagine
WTC?
This.
WTC?
I imagine this
the Iraq war and stuff.
Yeah. No, I think there's even a... There was no war in Iraq.
But, there was this thing where it was talking about... I mean, so you figure there hasn't been a baby in 18 years, right? Yeah. By year two, they probably figured it out, right? And by, they probably have, this thing with immigrants, everything else. The world is falling down around them. So you can imagine that they had been protesting... a larger part.
Because 18 years ago in the movie would be 2009.
Yeah.
So if they were if they met each other in 2003. Well, no,
so the flu pandemic happened in 2008.
Right.
Yeah. So 2006, the baby would have been born.
Yeah.
So 2005. Yeah. War on terror shit.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's whatever it is. I'm sure that there was they were protesting the government's probably heavy-handed draconian whatever at the time, and that unified them. Then he lost his way after they lost their child, but she radicalized and went the other way, right? So anyway, They're hanging out. They're like, all right, listen, we're going to get you to the coast. There's a guy at – so he is not far. Michael Caine's house is not far from Brex Hill, which is a refugee camp. And he has a connection there with one of the officers. He sells them pot. So he's like, listen, I'll talk to my guy. We can get you into Brex Hill. We can get you out to the coast. Here's how you're going to do it. And I'll set you all up. So everything's Gucci. And then the thrash metal perimeter alarms go off. And he's like, yeah, get the fuck out of here. Loads them in the car, sends them out in the woods. And then he, in a phenomenally sad scene, suicides his catatonic wife with quietus. And then as Clive Owen, the nursemaid, Clive Owen looks on from a ridge. He watches Luke and Charlie Hunnam's character basically torture, interrogate, murder Michael Caine.
Yeah, there's a shot in this where Michael Caine is shot in the hand that like they did a practical effect where his hand kind of explodes and it looks disgusting.
Right.
Like, not the very least movie's so fucking good.
It's super good. There's it's a way lot better of, than I remember.
There's that. A lot of really...
I remember liking it, but I didn't remember being this fucking
the good. Fucking... The practical effects in this movie, like, all the, like... All the, like, I don't know what I would... Like, war wounds. Like, all that stuff looks so... I mean, it looks disgusting, but, like, it's so real.
Yeah.
Like, it feels so real. Like,
It's almost like the opening of Saving Private Ryan.
I mean, I think it's, like, better, believe it or not. But, yeah, it's similar in that tone, yeah.
A lot of practical effects, a lot of squib work, a lot of like debris and shit.
Yeah, and you know, I'm sure we'll get into it later, but like the way it's shot in the natural lighting and just like again, like we said, it's like very close quarters and most times like everything feels very grounded. Like everything feels very like lived in.
Well, it doesn't rely on like big set piece bullshit that we've gotten so used to in all the movies.
Also like scant use of music.
Yeah.
Like you know what I mean? Like
So they get away and they go, they're going to meet up with this guy, Sid, who refers to himself in the third person the entire time, at an old defunct elementary school. Cause why you need elementary schools anymore? Everyone can buy cigarettes at this point. Then you get what I think was an interesting little bit of backstory from the nursemaid's point of view about how like at the beginning of this.
Yeah, she realized she didn't have any appointments.
Right, like that was actually fucking brilliant too. Yeah, like, and like having it in that elementary school that doesn't matter anymore was brilliant, right? Like
the only thing that makes it like, and again, this is a nitpick, is how would they know? Like it doesn't have the ubiquity of social media where everybody would have figured it out in like a week versus.
Right, well,
like,
social media didn't exist at the time, right? So, or not in the way that it does now. Twitter would have loved this. They meet up with Sid, and the idea is to get arrested and to get themselves into Brex Hill. So you're working through. Now this is when the movie, like a sad movie, gets sadder. Like
real quick. So this got nominated for Best Cinematography and lost to Pan's Labyrinth.
Oh,
and it got nominated for Best Editing, lost to The Departed.
I don't know about that.
It's hard to make that rad movie. Good editing.
So. They go into Brex Hill and it is just horrific. It is like, it is concentration camp-esque.
It's Gaza.
Yeah, it's terrible. It's Gaza.
That's the saddest
part. It's just regular old. So then they're working their way through this awful fucking the indoc. It's the fucking worst thing ever. And they work your way into this basically prison city. And they're supposed to find this gypsy woman, and she's going to take care of him.
Well, and in the process of this, in the bus, her water breaks,
right? Yeah. She's going through contractions. So they get to this fucking terrible burnout apartment building. Clive Owen has to wash his hands in a bucket of piss and then give
birth. And then he pours the rest of his bourbon all over his hands to sterilize him.
And right, so that's him, right, giving up the bottle, right?
That's his last sacrifice for the thing, yeah.
So they give birth to this baby, and it's like an actual newborn infant, whether it's a puppet or CGI or whatever.
Is part of the movie.
Yeah, but it's not like in every other movie where you see give birth to an 8 or 9
month old child. It looks great. Like it's hard to tell if it's CGI or what, but it looks great. Like however they did it, like it looks wonderful. So
they give birth to the baby. Clive Owen's got his faith in humanity back, maybe, and they're in this refugee camp. Like, all right, we gotta get out of this boat tomorrow. We're gonna be okay. And then there's a big knock on the door the next morning, and Sid shows up, and he's like, listen, the fish know where they are. The government's looking for them. The fish have attacked the refugee camp, blown a hole in the wall. Refugees are escaping. So the government's coming in hot. The refugees and the uprising, it's happening. It's happening right now. The pressure cooker has cooked. But Sid...
I want that to be a very serious news broadcast at some point.
The pressure cooker.
Ladies and gentlemen, the pressure cooker has cooked.
So Sid shows up. He's like, Sid realizes that all you people are being looked for by the government and the fishes and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And then he sees the baby.
Yeah.
And then he's like, I forgot how this worked. I was kind of hoping he would be part of like the shepherding arc.
Yeah, no.
But no, he turns into a scumbag.
He has a heel turn.
Yeah. So then he catches a diehard in the mouth.
Oh my God. Yeah.
And so now they are trying to escape through a legitimate war zone. And it is brilliantly done.
It is a very like poignant and sad scene from Universal Soldier Regeneration.
There's people out in the streets. There's refugees armed, marching, chanting. There are tanks in the street, blowing up buildings indiscriminately.
You know, shout out to Black Hawk Down and everything, but this might be the best urban warfare
movie ever. It's like you are on Clive. It is Resident Evil. You are on Clive Owen's shoulder this entire time, and it is tense and it is fucking scary.
And again, like, it's super long. Like, the take just keeps going and going and going.
And it's not without having to have something set up or something explode. It's not him walking down a hallway.
From about the time Michael Caine gets it, the movie takes place essentially in real time.
Yeah. Basically. Mm-hmm. So he's just getting shot at, fired. He's trying to protect. Oh, so the fish have shown up and they have taken, her name is, Key, and the baby. They've taken them from Clive Owen. And he's trying to hunt them down through the war zone. He catches up with them. Charlie Hunnam gets her. And then Luke, the now leader, like, his little soliloquy before it ends for him is also fucking brilliant.
Yeah.
Like, as he's like, there's fucking bullet holes going around his head. He stops and like fires a grenade launcher. And you know what? He's kind of like Thanos, because what he's saying ain't wrong.
I think they're trying to make a point about like kind of blind ideology here too. Yeah. He's like talking about the baby and he says he, and like it didn't even stop to occur to him
that it could be a girl. Right.
But it being a girl has greater implications.
Right. Because
if one woman is fertile and she gave birth to a girl,
a child,
we could have a chain, child. Right.
Yeah.
Cut for edit.
Let's move on.
So he gets away, gets through the war zone, gets and this is like sort of where it's the message of, you know, we shouldn't, you know, disrespect refugees and immigrants because they are the ones that basically, instead of trying to. Well, actually, it's this quiet, beautiful moment where everyone stops fighting for a second and they realize there's a baby here. And it's like, fuck. It's like the soldiers stop. The revolutionaries stop. Everyone stops. And they just get almost ushered out of the battlefield until someone's like,
go ahead. Much worse movie. This is the end of the movie.
Right. The baby brought peace.
Right. Everybody just stops and whatever happens, happens. And everybody's like, oh, cool, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. But no, this one, they're like, game back. Like, I think Sean said game on. And then people start shooting. They got tanks.
It all takes is one.
Right. Yeah. So they make it down to the water and then they row out to to this buoy where they're expecting to find this boat called the Tomorrow. And it's kind of quiet and foggy and sad and London and dreary. And, Clive Owens, Key starts freaking out, saying, "Oh my God, I'm bleeding all over the place." And Clive Owens like, no, it's me, they got me. And then he is like coaching her through how to quiet this baby down.
Terrible.
And he's like having like this
very,
moment
very
of like
sad
being a dad, and then he's fucking gone. And then the boat gets her, and that's the movie.
Are you all right?
No, it's fucking me up a little bit just talking about it. Yeah. So,
let it out, brother.
No, I mean it's
fucking sad, dude. He's there trying to like.
It's his heaven moment though, because he gets to be a dad again.
That is true. Yeah.
He gets to be a dad one last time before he goes, and then he gets to
say
goodbye
to a kid on his terms, as opposed to.
And then she names the kid after his kid.
Yeah.
It got me. That's it.
That's good shit.
God damn you, Alfonso Cuarón. Tormented me from beyond the grave.
He tried to like made a movie last year. He's still alive.
Dead to me.
He beats.
movie's fucking good.
Dude's a good director.
So that's it. That's Children of Men, a movie that I thought I remembered liking, and I think I never understood, like, I think I was watching it through, like, young eyes before. Well,
the problem is you're watching it as a cautionary science fiction tale.
As opposed
and now
to
you're watching it as a documentary.
Yeah. Well, I also don't think I don't think I fully grasped all of the sort of political intrigue and, like, double crosses before. Yeah. I thought they were just, like, also, getting a woman out of a war zone.
Like, when I saw this in the theater. Mm-hmm. So it was in 2006.
Yeah.
I was
25.
20 years younger.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, I just wanted to see things go boom.
Yeah, I just want to see explosions. Well, like gunfights,
and it's 20 years less movies you've watched. Because this movie rewards you for understanding how movies work.
Right? Right. It rewards you.
Yeah. And now we can pretend like we understood it. Go back and edit this part out.
He stepped on my lines. I was going to say, I'm cutting all the Nate stuff out.
Like the time.
I'm cutting all the Nate stuff out. The baby's going to get a lot of sex line out.
Jonah Jameson was in that Spider-Man movie. You had to keep beeping it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That was the most work I put in the show in years.
This is one of my favorite movies of all time. I've loved it since I saw it the first time. In like... I didn't even see it in the theater. I saw it in 2008.
Alec, is your favorite part of this movie that it's Nate's favorite movie?
I mean, yeah. I get on board with that.
Yeah.
I can see why this would be somebody's favorite.
Do you like the amount of dogs? You know, I'm glad that you looked up the
dog
book. This is, no. You looked up the book that this is based on because... I feel like, because you said in the book that they, like, act like dogs and cats are, like the babies. And I feel like the movie doesn't ever say that, but there are, like, dogs and cats in almost every scene of this movie.
And a
movie.
Lot of them being, like, carried. And, like,
yeah, yeah.
Right.
Well, there's also a zebra. It's a very Android Dream of electric sheep.
It's
the little one.
It's AJ.
It's AJ.
It's Baby Diego.
Baby Diego. But, yeah, I was wrong. I don't know what I'd love to go back to my when I left the theater when I was
old 25-year-old Edgelord TJ babies. Well, okay.
Well, that's probably I still feel that way.
I don't want to hear Alex's thoughts because he hasn't said much during the whole shebang and bang.
Yeah, I'm just really tired.
All right then.
Nailed it.
This movie is tremendous. I liked it when I saw it the first time. I remember wow, ouch. Bit my tongue.
Oh my god.
I think I saw it with TJ.
Probably.
When we left the theater, I remember liking it a lot and not understanding why he didn't like it.
Yeah,
knowing that TJ is much deeper into like movies than me.
Yeah, but you were wrong.
He's smart. He's wrong.
He must know why. He just watched a lot.
Yeah, I'm an idiot.
I mean,
mile wide.
Well, this movie is tremendous. It's super engaging from beginning to end, and it moves. It's over before you even realize almost that it started.
Yeah, like, yeah, I agree. The pacing is
this movie is tremendous.
It's an hour 45. There's not a wasted moment in it.
No fat.
Totally agree.
But I don't want anything added to it either.
No.
Yeah.
I am gonna.
No, it doesn't need anything.
I'm gonna find the book and read the book.
Do.
It said from what I had read about it on Wikipedia, the book is kind of written like. Not like World War Z.
Journal entries?
Like his journal entries.
The epistolary, yeah.
Yeah. Which,
whatever that means.
Epistolary? Is that what that is?
It's like when you use like a kind of real document, like newspaper.
Oh, I got you.
All the Ken Burns Civil Wars were epistolary documents.
Mary Shelley's French.
Dracula was written like that. Also, Chuck Palahniuk's Rant. That's an oral history, and that's slightly different.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I could.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of recordings.
It's basically like told through interviews and stuff.
Yeah.
That book is not very good.
It's
one of his weaker books.
The movie looks great. There's probably three or four lights in the entire movie. So much of it shot outdoors.
Yeah. Well, those lights are on end tables.
Speaking of lights, there's this scene like early on when Clive Owen gets like blackbacked. And he gets into that room ultra like orange light on. It looks so fucking cool. Like it's such a great moment. And then when they change it and turn it off, it's like, man, like, I don't know. Like this movie is just, I mean, we talked about the long takes and the intricacies of it, but that's the best way I can describe this movie. It's just very Everything is very intricate.
Everything's intentional. Like
everything
that,
is
that just... light behind Julianne Moore is to show you that she's Jesus in the movie. They kill the religious fundamentalist people kill Jesus because they don't think that a peaceful mode is the way to handle the problem.
Holy shit, dude. I didn't even put that together either.
To start the uprising. He's right. Like, he's they're just right. evangelicals who want to bring on the apocalypse.
He's so good at movies. Well, he did say this is his favorite movie, so I suspect that he watched it a couple of times.
It's like when Superman...
Or Robot Cop.
Robert Cop. So a movie that's so like meticulous, it comes across.
Oh, there it goes.
Okay.
You're right. Hold on.
It doesn't seem at all like stagey because all the handheld shots and stuff.
You all right, bro?
You okay? Yeah.
Yeah, we're almost done anyway.
Yeah.
I didn't like that fucking chair anyways.
Maybe you can use this one.
I'll just stay up. Since we're almost done.
Yeah.
Alright.
Hit Sean with that.
Moving on.
Still polls.
Oh wait, so here's what's weird. Real quick. You know how you said this movie lost to Pan's Labyrinth?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This same director was a producer on Pan's Labyrinth.
Oh. Mm. Well, he's double dipping.
Well, yeah.
I think him and Del Toro are buddies.
Are they friends or am I racist?
The third time tonight.
Well, I also got him confused with the director of The Revenant. It's two different people.
Mm. Oh, did he not direct that?
No, but the same cinematographer.
Oh, okay.
That makes sense.
Inarritu. He's the one that directed the black and white movie on Netflix, that original.
No, that was him.
That's him.
That's,
okay.
Alfonso
Cuarón. Yeah, that's
I liked Roma.
It's okay if I mix up Hispanic people.
All right.
Old Al Curian.
Let's get into Five Knuckle Shuffles, shall we? We got to give it to our special guest, Nasty Nate.
The guy who knows everything about movies with his nasty opinion.
He gives it a one.
Yeah, yeah. This is
a four. It's my favorite movie. It's a one. It's
such a
hate movie.
I give it my highest rating.
Movies fucking suck.
That's how Nate talks, too, by the way.
When he's not on microphone, it's not that.
This is all.
When are we going to see some tits?
I mean, this movie does have two.
It does have
titty. It has actually multiple because there's cows too.
Oh, that's right.
But the movie's a 10. It's easily a 10. It's beautiful. It holds up still. I haven't actually watched it in like 5 or 6 years, and it really still looks good. And that was the one thing that I was kind of obsessing over. Was, oh, what's going to look CG? What's going to look
I couldn't even tell.
Everything feels real. Like, we remarked, someone mentioned, like, all the tech, all the near-future technology stuff tracks perfectly where it's like, oh, yeah, in 3 actual years, everything will look exactly like this.
I mean, they kind of nailed it, right? Like, just in that office scene where they have, like, flat-screen monitors. That's, like, really...
The only thing they didn't nail is the... readily available as of cell phones.
People have cell phones, but everybody has like an Alexa thing that has a little mini screen on it.
In 2006, cell phones were pretty prevalent, were they not? I had a cell phone in 2006.
Yeah, but also like
I don't think I had a smartphone though.
It's pre-smartphone.
But I also could see like a drop line of dialogue somewhere where the government has like crack down on
infrastructure is sort of falling to pieces. Yeah. Maybe the satellites.
I mean, they never said it, but I could easily see that.
You brought up the book, and I think we got kind of sidetracked. But did you ever bring up the point about how in the book they not worship, but they hold puppies and kittens in very high regard because they can't have children?
Yeah,
you actually say that.
We said that.
Yeah. I died.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a 10. It's also just scary because it's really close to reality.
It made me uncomfortable. It feels like
in our lifetime, this is a thing we will experience wake up to.
The rounding people in the cages and like, again, with all the, just this week, all the talk about the fucking border.
Just occurred to me that the lady's name is Key. Like the key to future.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. like that and
gets a,
and again
gets a
like
six.
The parallels to Gaza is like it just it like it made I know the movie's supposed to make you feel uncomfortable, but like it's too close to being real. Like it's just but anyway. Okay, so 10 from Nate. Pass the mic, my friend.
Ooh, Gogs.
It's gonna be a 10 for me too. It's like if you told me coming into this, I was probably thinking it was going to be in 7 territory because I remember liking it, but I didn't like Ding, Jesus Christ.
Yep, I liked it.
I liked it.
Ding, you too.
I remember liking it, but I didn't remember like I remember how beautiful.
Liking it?
Yeah, I didn't like it. Right? I don't remember how beautiful this movie is. It is shot just gorgeous. Clive Owen is so good in this movie. Everyone's good in this movie. Clive Owen, though, is like, Clive Owen.
He's very believable.
He doesn't do anything super, like, heroic.
Yeah. No, he's very, yeah, it's.
He does get loose with that car battery.
He does, but, like, what's.
He wrecks that dude.
He looks so surprised at himself after he does it.
Right.
He's able to pull off, like, this is a guy who was punching the clock in the dreariest possible reality where there's absolutely no future.
You're good with words. What's the guy who's, like, the reluctant hero, right? He doesn't want any of
this.
The
reluctant hero.
Yeah, I'm in the Nate field of good words.
But also, like, I feel like it's
the storyboards are painted.
Oh, wow. Of course they are.
The believability of him being in the middle of a war zone, I don't think I've ever seen a movie where, like, it's been treated so seriously, right? Like, it's not like a Jackie Chan movie where
he's not like Luke duking over barriers. He's not like a hero. He's scared the entire time. But he's doing it. It's fucking brilliant. It's a 10. He does
a backflip and hit a gritty.
Right.
The flaw face.
None of the war zone stuff aligns us with any side, right?
Right.
Yeah. We don't have to deal with that patriotism shit that goes into every other war movie and makes every other war zone tainted with, like, oh, there's good guys.
It does have that ground level feel because you're not really even sure who the belligerents in this particular conflict are. There's some vague, you know, Arabic sect, and then there's some vague military of some sort, and then there's refugees, and, like, who knows?
No, it's like, and, like, is the uprising different than the fish?
I think the uprising is the more religious people.
Or it's like the more
militant. Luke was an uprising person who infiltrated Julianne Moore's fish group.
Yeah, but anyway,
it's a fucking 10. It's brilliant. It's better than I remembered it. And it's terrifyingly, I guess it's not prescient anymore. It's fucking terrifyingly just accurate. Now. Yeah. TJ.
It's also a 10. I loved it. I'd love to interview my younger self and ask what I didn't like about the movie. If I had to, like, nitpick, and again, this is probably what I thought back then, but I don't know. Because this is just how I am, you guys know how I am, I kind of would have ended the movie before the boat shows up.
Yeah.
I like just the idea of her.
It's adrift.
You're
a grim, sad human being. Like, I get it. I probably would have done the same thing.
You want a missed ending? Not a quite missed ending.
Well, I mean, like, I like the idea that it
could go either way.
It could go either way. Like, I like the idea of keeping
that. Or maybe the guys in the boats also have guns and they draw down, and then it just cuts. Well, that's the thing. The movie doesn't end in a positive way, necessarily.
That's true. You don't know.
He's as vulnerable as possible.
Right.
She's in a rowboat holding a baby.
You have no idea what these people want. It's a fair point. You don't know the intention of the people in the boat. But I think, like, again, I don't have a problem with it now. But I can see, wrote the movie, I would have probably made it a little more ambiguous.
Is this a series 7 issue? Like, remember when you thought you didn't like, and then you turned
the when I thought the alternate ending was way better, and it's not. It's actually way worse. Yeah. I don't know, but I love this movie. Like, it's fucking great. I love, like Sean said it earlier, but, like, and we have our disagreements on Civil War, but one of the things I liked about Civil War, you know, plot notwithstanding, was the combat in that movie. I thought it was done really well. It's way better in this.
Yeah.
But, like, this is, like, on another level. Like, this is, like, filmmaking. Like, this is, like, a masterclass in staging, in just the visual effects, in the use of, like, again, the sound design. Like, I'd love to watch this in a theater again because the sound design.
The lack of score.
So good. Yeah. And then the use of.
If you hear this in surround sound, there's probably bullet noises going off all good. Over.
But then also earlier in the film, you have really clever song usage. Like, they use, like, real world songs early on in the movie. And I like how they fade away. Like, there's none of that once you get past a certain point in the movie. And I think, I don't know, again, I don't know if it's intentional or not, but, like, I took it as kind of like we're drifting away from our humanity, right? Like, we remember all these parts of our past, but as they go, as you get further and further away, it gets quieter and quieter, and all you hear is gunfire and tanks and all that shit. I mean, I think it's just brilliant. And, like, Nate's pointed out, like, several times, like, there's just so many little fucking details. Like, one of the things I love the most right before the ending is the fucking, like,
the fact that the two fucking fighter jets fly in and just bomb that whole area. Even
like they're gonna, he's like, we gotta get you. He's like, we're gonna get you out of here.
I mean, they
for his own reasons, but like they're gonna, it's happening now, so they're gonna bomb this. Right.
I mean, they literally just assumed
that's enough.
They vaporize that whole area, and it's like, again,
also you're not understand that they just vaporize their own troops. Most
of them give a fuck. Yeah. There was no pullout order. You have to pull out anymore because no more kids.
Hey, it's a 10. This movie's absolutely brilliant. There's no weak parts to it. The whole cast is great. Everyone, top to down. There's not a bad performance in the whole thing.
Coast to coast.
It's like
butter and toast.
Again, it moves so well. Like, I loved it. It's a 10. Alec.
It's a 10.
Hell yeah.
Dude, this movie is certified good ass movie.
This might be the highest rated movie ever. Five people.
Yeah.
Fuck, it's the first one to get a 50.
I don't know. Nate was on the Jaws episode.
Jaws probably got a 50.
Jaws doesn't count.
Jaws and Children of Men.
Well, this movie fucking slaps.
Well, you love your post-apocalyptic movies too.
Yes. This is like, put this in my veins.
It's a good movie for sad boys.
Yeah. Budget of $76 million.
Okay.
Made 70.
Oh wow.
That's a shame.
Yeah.
I can see people and not like, liking this movie at all.
Well, it's a downer.
Yeah. But like, it didn't win too well with like awards, but like critics lists and like ratings and shit, it's like
very well regarded.
Can I get in? This is usually Alec's job, but I'll do it since you're doing your thing. Nominated for Best Picture this year, The Departed, Letters from Iwo Jima, Little Miss Sunshine, The Queen.
Yeah. Did he get a Best Picture nod?
That's disgusting.
It's still in that window. Like we're going into Iraq and Afghanistan when this movie is coming out.
Yeah.
And this movie is making a distinct point about how that's a bad path to go down.
The Departed isn't even the best movie of itself.
Yeah, right, it's the second best of itself. And The Queen, a movie that no one's thought about in fucking decades.
Mm-hmm. This movie slaps. I'm going to go find the book and read the book this week.
Hell yeah. See, this movie's so good. It's Alex Gay. it's the last day of Pride, so...
And I want to watch Shoot 'Em Up. Shoot 'Em Up as
Shoot 'Em Up rocks.
A similar premise with Clive Owen protecting a baby from evildoers.
Clive Owen baby.
Paul Giamatti, if I remember.
Yeah, Paul Giamatti is eating like who's eating carrots the whole time.
Clive Owen.
Yeah,
and Bugs Bunny.
That's good for your eyesight.
Monica Bellucci is the
milkmaid or whatever she is.
Yeah,
sure is.
She's like a
Wood Mersh.
Oh, careful. I had the Monica Bellucci dream.
No, I didn't go yet.
Sean.
It's six. No, it's just, I'm just a hater. I'm like Armand Wendt, or that guy that gave Toy Story 3, like, what was it? Was it Toy Story?
I think it was Toy Story 4. I don't know.
No, this movie's fucking perfect. Like, there's no fat. Like, it just goes. You're emotionally affected. You know a lot about the characters without having to know really anything about them. Like... It's gorgeous. It's propulsive. You know exactly. I don't know if we talked about it on here, but we talked about it during the geography in movies like this is very hard to nail sometimes. But because and Nate's brought it up, Goggs have brought it up, you're so tight to I almost called him Gerard Butler again, Clive Owen, that you know so exactly where you are at all like times.
He's British and dark haired.
There's very few
like Irish or Scottish or something. Yeah,
from an island.
They're technically British. There's very few establishing shots, which you know is usually bad in a movie like this when you're in a cityscape. But again, and the fact that you don't know exactly where they are in relation to necessarily everything on the outside doesn't matter because everything's a bottle. Like it's not a bottle movie, but once you get in there, it bottlenecks you into where, and that's where a lot of that tension comes from. Once you get through the gate, so like the language of cinema, right? They're kind of wide open everywhere. So they get a very tiny car, they get there, and then they get in that gate. And once they're in that gate, they're in a tunnel to wherever they're going for the rest of the
film. Yeah.
And all the long takes in this movie are so effective because a lesser movie would try to create chaos by just chopping the shit out of it.
Well, that's the other thing. Liam Neeson, this movie doesn't have like a lot of like shaky cam. Like there's hand cam stuff in here, but it's not obnoxious.
No,
it's natural. Like, what you would feel like walking through this.
No, I think perfect. Like this is definitely the peak of his movies. Like and that's fair. Like you're not gonna make two of these.
No.
Yeah.
So
good shout out to Alfonso Cuarón.
Yeah, he's very
his Harry Potter movie is excellent.
That's what everybody said.
Which one did he do?
Prisoner of Azkaban, I think.
Yeah. It's the darkest one.
The third one, yeah.
We did it.
One of these days, I'll get around to watching those movies.
He did that before. Oh, I didn't realize that. I'm
surprised we haven't done a Harry Potter month.
Come up with a month, man.
But how we Harry Potter are like month. Seven of those movies?
Yeah, we eight, just have to watch. Them. We just have to watch like, four of them.
Dude, we have seasons half of them. Like non-consecutive though.
I mean, we watched. There was more Saw movies than we had.
The month. Saw isn't a continuing narrative. Oh, I don't think point. The Saw.
That's that is a fair point.
The Nintendo.
Nice.
All right. So what's next? Whose pick is it next week? This was my pick, right? I think it was. Yeah.
I have a pick.
Alec,
go for it. Seventh Son.
What the hell is that?
Fucking witches.
Oh. She's in that?
Yeah.
Oh my god.
I think she's in most of that, right?
Yeah, she's like the evil sorcerer.
Oh my god. We get to watch friggin' Rooster Cogburn Witch Hunter. Oh my god.
Is Vin Diesel in that?
No, he's in The Last Witch Hunter, which we smash together pretty regularly.
Jesus Christ.
All right. Well, next week, Seventh Son. Fucking witches.
Brace yourself.
Bye, everybody.
Probably not going to be as good as this week.
Happy Pride.
We got to do the Lube Up Boys since we're live.
Oh, yeah. Don't forget the Lube Up Boys for Pride.
Eat your own ass.
Go.
Oh, yeah, we don't say eat your own ass anymore.
We lost that. We lost the thread. Now it's back, baby.
Fly in America.
Your catchphrases have to evolve over time.
That is true.
That's just part of having a live.
Oh, Nate, anything to plug?
Oh, listen to Debut Buddies. That's my podcast.
Right. Or as I like to call it, Debut Buddies.
Yeah.
We'll cut that, too.
Goodbye, everybody.